Hello, 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 my friends, and welcome to another episode of Terror Radio Podcast. If this is your first time joining me, then welcome. This is a podcast dedicated in bringing you the best of horror and thriller, old-time radio broadcasts, as well as original stories. I'm your host, Keith, a.k.a. The Radio Show Nerd. And today's episode is entitled, Gone Too Soon. Now, if you're familiar with my podcast, you know that I occasionally like to feature particular radio programs that weren't on the airwaves for too long, but in my opinion, still held a strong impact within the horror and suspense genre. So, without further ado, this is Terror Radio. The two radio series highlighted today are The Strange Dr. Weird and The Black Book. Now, The Strange Dr. Weird began in 1944 and concluded in 1945 and broadcasted on the Mutual Broadcasting Network. Now, this is seen to be a certain type of spinoff of the popular radio series The Mysterious Traveler, or as some refer to it as a poor man's version of The Mysterious Traveler, probably because it was narrated by the same radio actor, Maurice Tarplin, and many of the scripts were nothing more than condensed 15-minute versions of scripts used on The Mysterious Traveler. It was produced and directed by Jock McGregor. The Black Book, or also known as The Man in Black, debuted on CBS on February 17th, 1952, and concluded on March 2nd, 1952. And this was narrated by radio actor Paul Frees, who was known as the Teller of Tales. Now, this radio series, Mr. Frees would recite stories that usually centered around someone trying to commit the perfect murder, or on the run after committing said crime. The first two radio plays will be Journey into the Unknown, which first broadcasted on The Strange Dr. Weird on November 21st, 1944, and Beauty and the Beast, and this is not the fairy tale we're used to, which broadcasted on The Strange Dr. Weird on January 16th, 1945. Following that are the two radio plays, My Favorite Corpse, which broadcasted on The Black Book on February 24th, 1952, followed by Vagabond Murder, which broadcasted on March 2nd, 1952. Now, you all know the drill. Sit back, turn down the lights, and listen to The Strange Dr. Weird, followed by The Black Book.
Adam Katz presents The Strange Dr. Weird. Good evening. Come in, won't you? You seem a bit nervous. Perhaps it would calm you a little if I were to read to you from the secret journal of Professor Drake. It's a fascinating tale. I call it Journey into the Unknown. There are some extremely interesting entries in Professor Drake's journal, particularly those beginning with the entry made October 1st, which reads, "Today my son Paul has reached the final stages in the preparation of his serum number 17. After 2 years of intensive work and 16 failures, he believes that he's at last succeeded."
But just think of it, Paul. Before you took the serum, you could only lift 200 pounds. But now you can lift 400. Why, your strength has been doubled.
Yes, With the added strength my serum will give him, man will be able to resist diseases that he succumbs to now. His lifespan will be lengthened by 20 or 30 years. Perhaps he...
No, I'll answer it, Paul. Oh, it's you, Julia.
Yes, I want you, Paul.
Oh, you can't, Julia. He's right in the midst of an experiment.
But I haven't seen or heard from him in 2 weeks. After all, I am his fiancé.
Well, Julia, he can't be disturbed. He's in the...
Oh, hello, darling.
Why, Julia.
Oh, God, you squeeze me so tightly.
I'm sorry, dear. I'm afraid I don't know my own strength.
Oh, that's all right. Paul, what kind of experiment is it you're working on?
Darling, I can't reveal anything yet. Not even to you. But when my work is done, you'll be the first one to hear about it.
Here's the entry for October 7th. Serum number 17 is effective beyond Paul's wildest hopes.
Oh, think of it, Paul. Today you were able to lick up 600 pounds with ease.
Yes.
Why are you staring at yourself in the mirror so?
Father, do you notice any change in the shape of my head?
Why, no, Paul. And I'd certainly notice a change if there were one.
Yes, of course. It must be just my imagination.
On October 8th, he wrote, "This morning when I entered the laboratory, I found Paul fast asleep at his desk. I woke him."
Paul, wake up.
Huh?
You should have gone to bed when I... Paul. No, it can't be.
What is it, Father? What's wrong?
Your face.
My face. Quick, hand me that mirror.
Here.
No. I was right. Look at me, Father. My face has become broad. The features flattened. The cheekbones prominent. And notice how thick the hair on my body has become. I've reverted to the Neanderthal man.
The Neanderthal man? But, Paul, he existed 50,000 years ago.
Yes, I know. At the swift pace I'm going backwards, it may only be a week, a few days, before I revert to an ape completely.
Paul, what are we going to do?
There's only one way I can save myself. I must find a neutralizer that will stop the serum from changing me into an ape before it's too late.
In his entry for October 10th, he wrote, "Paul has been working 48 hours without rest, and so far has been unsuccessful in finding a neutralizer. This morning when I entered the laboratory, I could see that he is looking more and more like an ape every day."
Paul, you just can't go on this way. You've got to get some rest.
I can't rest. Every minute is precious. I lost 4 hours last night.
What? You lost 4 hours? I don't understand.
While I was working here last night, I glanced at the clock to find it was just 3 o'clock. Then, the next thing I remember was finding myself in the hall, and the clock was just striking 7.
What?
I can't remember those 4 hours, where I was, what I was doing. Those 4 hours, I lost my ability to think as a man. My mind became that of an ape. During those 4 hours, I actually was an ape.
Return to the story of the terrible danger threatening this young scientist in just a moment. Meanwhile, for a breathing spell, a word from Dr. Weird.
Yes, a breathing spell. Something pleasant to think upon. And what subject could be more appropriate at this fall season than cats? I'm sure my young friend here can tell you something most helpful about Adam hats.
Thank you, Doctor. Gentlemen, Adam, hatter to famous Americans for many years, has created a brand new value in fine headgear for men. It's the Adam 5. Nowhere in America can you find a better buy. Try on an Adam 5. See for yourself. Notice the perfect fit, the up-to-the-minute fashion, the quality feel of the lustrous, fine fur felt. Every Adam 5 is fine fur felt. Hand-blocked by master craftsmen. And you have a great variety of correct styles from which to choose. Try on an Adam 5 tomorrow. You'll look right and feel right in one. Proud to be seen wearing one anywhere. For other Adam hats, choose from prices ranging from $3.45 to $10. If it bears the Adam crest of quality inside the crown, you can be sure of honest value. Now, let's return to Dr. Weird and his tale, Journey into the Unknown.
The entry for October 11th in Professor Drake's journal reads as follows. The changes in Paul's appearance continue. His body is now completely covered with a heavy growth of hair, and his skin is rapidly turning to a deep brown and becoming coarse and callous. His arms have lengthened almost 5 inches, and he walks more and more in a stooped manner, with hands almost touching the floor. There's yet no change in voice has been noted. On October 12th, he wrote, last night, Paul suddenly dropped a test tube and snarled at me. In that moment, he was completely an ape. The entry for October 13th reads, last night, when I came into the laboratory, I found a window open and Paul gone. I immediately rushed out into the night to find him. A few blocks away on the university campus, I saw police gathered around the body of a girl who had just been murdered. Every bone in her body had been crushed. A few hours later, Paul returned to this house. He could recall nothing of what had happened or where he'd been. To prevent another accident from occurring, today I had steel bars placed over Paul's bedroom window.
Oh, it's you, Julia.
Good evening, Mr. Drake. I want to see Paul.
No, I'm sorry, Julia, but Paul can't be disturbed. He's asleep in his room.
You've been putting me off for days, but this time I am going to see him.
Hey, Julia, come back. You can't see him now.
The light is... Oh, see this?
Julia, you shouldn't...
Why, he isn't here. His room's empty.
He isn't here.
Why were those bars put over Paul's windows?
It's all part of the experiment, Julia.
Well, this window over here... I thought someone had bent the bars apart to escape. But no man could have bent bars as strong as these. That ape.
What ape, Julia?
The one that the police believe crushed that poor girl to death last night.
No, really, Julia. Do you think
you
for a moment
that... You were using an ape in the experiment. This room was his cage. And now he's escaped.
Julia, you're wrong, I assure you.
Paul's out looking for that ape, isn't he? And the ape's a killer.
Please, Julia.
I'm going to get the police.
At the latest by day after tomorrow. And now, a special message from police headquarters. 20 minutes ago, an unidentified girl was found crushed to death. It is believed she was killed by the ape that murdered Betty Ryan late last night. All residents are warned to get off the street. That...
Father, I heard what that announcer said. I killed that girl tonight, didn't I? And the one last night, too. I'm a murderer.
Paul, listen to me. The police are looking everywhere for you. We haven't a moment to lose. The neutralizer we were working on last night, it should be ready by now, shouldn't it?
Yes. And this time, I'm certain it will work.
You must take an injection before it's too late and you revert for Albert money.
Open up in there! The police!
Quick, Father! The neutralizer before it's too late!
I have to fill this hypodermic, Paul, before I can give you the injection.
All right, you men. Break the door down.
Hurry, Father, hurry!
I am.
It's too late!
The ape, there he goes, man, out the window.
Paul, come back!
Mike, flash a warning to every patrol car. Issue Tommy guns to all the men. The orders are, shoot to kill! Men, spread out. You've got the ape cornered now.
Please, Chief, you've got to listen to me. If you'll only let me inject this neutralizer into him, then there won't be any need for all this.
Oh, don't listen to him, Chief. That ape's a killer.
Yeah, we're going to put an end to that ape once and for all.
Oh, no, you can't. You don't understand. It isn't an ape. It's my son, Professor Drake.
Your son. I know an ape when I see one.
Yes, I know, but it's my son changed into an ape. This neutralizer will bring him back to normal.
You must be crazy. Okay, Mike, let him have it.
No, I won't let you. I'm coming, Paul. I'm coming.
Mike, come back. Come back, you hear? Order fire, Mike.
Here I am, Paul. Paul, it's Father. I have the neutralizer.
Come on,
Paul, I have the injection. Here, give me your arm. Oh, no! 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 No!
Drop the old man's body now. Let him have it.
Oh, my chest. Father, where am I? What's happened? Oh.
It was a great pity about poor Professor Drake, wasn't it? He was so young. What am I going to do with his journal? I thought I might carry on his experiments. But I would need someone to assist me as a sort of human guinea pig. Perhaps you would like to volunteer. Oh, you have to go. Too bad. Perhaps you'll drop in on me again soon. I'm always home. Just look for the house on the other side of the cemetery. The house of Dr. Weird.
The Strange Dr. Weird.
Good evening. Come in, won't you? Well, what's the matter? You seem a bit nervous. Perhaps the cemetery outside this house has upset you. But there are things far worse than cemeteries. For instance, the feeling of being cut off from the world by an insanely jealous man, as in the story I want to tell you tonight. The story I call Beauty and the Beast. My story begins in New England, on a lonely, desolate cliff overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. Near the edge of the cliff, which towers 200 feet above the rocks below, a young man stands, a mere shadow in the darkness of the night. Time and time again, he impatiently turns to look at the huge, foreboding old manor house, which is perched near the cliff's edge. Suddenly, out of the darkness, a beautiful girl appears and runs to his outstretched arms.
Oh, Kathy, darling, why are you so late?
I couldn't slip out of the house any sooner, Alan. Jason was watching my every move.
Oh, Kathy, he's twice your age.
I know.
The ugliest man I've ever known. Whatever made you marry him?
I don't know. After my father died, I was all alone. Jason kept after me to marry him. Something in his eyes forced me to say yes. I was afraid to refuse.
Well, you're not going on living with him. I'm going to take you away.
Oh, Alan, you don't know what you're saying. I can't leave.
Why not?
If I were to run away, Jason would follow you and kill you. He'd kill you the way he killed...
The way he killed whom?
Well, you remember George Davis, don't you?
Why, of course. He was Jason's secretary.
Well, one evening, 2 weeks ago, Jason found me talking to George in the library. A thing he'd forbidden me to do. And the next morning, Jason told me he discharged George and that he'd already left. But then I discovered that all of George's clothes were still in his room.
His clothes were in his room?
Yes. Surely if he'd been discharged, he'd have taken them with him.
Then you think that
I'm sure of it. He must have killed George that very night. He'll kill anyone he thinks is trying to take me away from him. Oh, darling, I couldn't stand to have anything happen to you.
Now, darling, nothing's going to happen to me, nor to you. I'm taking you away from here. What time can you meet me here tomorrow night?
I think I can manage to slip away around 9 o'clock.
All right, darling, 9 o'clock it is. Now, you better return to the house before Jason misses you.
Catherine!
Jason!
Where were you, Catherine?
Oh, I was just out getting some fresh air.
You're lying. You slipped out to meet someone.
No, Jason, really. Oh, Jason! My arm! You're hurting me.
Who was it? Alan? Was it Alan? Tell me, or I'll...
Beg pardon, sir. But Sheriff Rogers is here to see you.
Very well, Charles. Show him in. I'll do all the talking, Catherine.
Good evening, Mr. Winthrop. Miss Winthrop. Sorry to intrude, but I must.
What can I do for you, Sheriff?
I understand you have a secretary, George Davis.
I did have. I discharged him 2 weeks ago. Why are you so interested, Sheriff?
Because his body was washed ashore this afternoon, 20 miles down the coast.
Well?
There were deep gashes on the body as though it had fallen from a great height onto the rocks and the sea. It may be suicide, and it may be murder.
You say it may be murder?
Yeah.
Surely you don't suspect I had anything to do with it, do you?
I don't know. There have been some mighty strange things happening around here. 4 months ago, Sam Arnold, your chauffeur, was murdered, and now...
Sam Arnold? Murdered?
You seem surprised, Miss Winthrop. Don't you know he was murdered?
I'm afraid she doesn't, Sheriff. She's been ill for quite some time, so I kept the news from her.
Oh, then she doesn't know that Arnold was stabbed to death less than 100 yards from this house.
Oh, no, no. I thought he'd been discharged. Who did it?
Well, we haven't found Sam's murder yet, Miss Winthrop. Now we have another mystery on our hands, the death of George Davis. Mr. Winthrop, I want you and your wife to be at the coroner's inquest in the village day after tomorrow. Quite a few questions we want to ask you about the deaths of both Sam Arnold and George Davis. There's a lot more going on around here than meets the eye.
Dr. Weird's story will continue in a little while. And now I'd
Young man, before you go on, remember where you are. You know what happens on this program to people who aren't careful what they say.
Oh, I'll be careful. I'm always careful. Careful with my facts whenever I talk about Adam Hats. You see, Adam Hats are so downright good-looking, I have to be careful about my enthusiasm. And the makers of Adam Hats are careful, too. Careful to see that every Adam is well-made. Look at any Adam, and you can see for yourself the quality workmanship that goes into the designing of Adam's smart styling, perfect fit, and correct details. Care, too, is taken in the choice of material and color. That's why only genuine all-fur felt in the newest shades is used in Adam hats. So if you're a careful dresser and a careful spender, choose an Adam. Still priced at $3.45 to $10. Still, America's outstanding hat value. Now, back to Dr. Weird.
And now I'll finish my story, Beauty and the Beast. 24 hours have passed, each one of which has been an eternity to Kathy. Try as she would, she couldn't forget the deaths of Sam Arnold and George Davis. One thing seemed perfectly clear to her. Jason had murdered the two men in a jealous rage. He would stop at nothing in his madness. Her mind in a turmoil, Kathy waited tensely for 9 o'clock and her meeting with Alan.
Catherine, why do you keep looking at the clock every other minute?
I'm not aware that I am.
Is it because you have some secret rendezvous with someone?
No, I haven't.
You're lying. Whom are you going to meet? Tell me!
Oh! Jason, my arm!
Tell me!
No one!
You're lying! I ought to kill you!
Yes, kill me! Get rid of me, so I can't testify tomorrow at the coroner's inquest!
What are you talking about?
You want to kill me because you're afraid of what I might tell them! I know you killed Sam Arnold and George Davis!
Is that what you intend to tell them tomorrow?
Yes, you're nothing but a murderer! Jason! Don't look at me that way, Jason! I'm not going to let you kill me! Stay away from me, Jason. I won't let you kill me.
Put down that poker, Catherine. Put it down, I say.
No, if you come any closer, Jason, I'll use it. Jason, don't, or I'll use it. I warned you, Jason. I warned you.
Kathy, you mustn't cry. You struck Jason in self-defense.
Oh, Adam, what are we going to do?
We're going through with the plans I've made. I have 2 tickets and a plane for Mexico, and we're going tonight.
Catherine!
Jason!
Oh, there you are.
You're not dead. I didn't kill you.
No, the blow you struck me only... Helen, what are you doing here?
I've come to take Kathy away, Jason.
Helen, you don't know what you're saying.
I'm warning you, Jason. Don't try to stop me.
You don't understand, Helen. She's a murderess. She killed 2 men.
What are you saying? I never killed anyone.
Helen, I'm telling you the truth. She killed Sam Arnold and George A. Davis.
You're lying. You're lying. I didn't.
How could she possibly kill 2 men and not know it?
Because she's insane.
Insane?
A homicidal maniac. There are times when she loses control of her mind. And when she does, she kills.
And then she comes to and has no memory of it, I suppose.
Yes, that's it exactly. Just a minute before she pushed George Davis off this very cliff we're standing on, I heard her talking to him. Her voice was low, excited, the voice of a homicidal maniac. Before I could reach them, she'd pushed him off this cliff. And then she fainted. And when she regained consciousness, she had no memory of what had happened.
No, it isn't true, Alan. He's trying to blame me for murders he's committed.
Yes, I know, dear. Your story's very clever, Jason. would account rather nicely for the deaths of those two men, wouldn't it?
I'm telling you the truth, do you hear? And I'm going to tell it to the coroner's jury tomorrow. I've protected her as long as I can.
You're not going to tell the coroner's jury anything tomorrow.
Ellen, she's insane.
No.
She has to be exposed for both our sakes.
Why?
Ellen, let go of me.
You don't deserve to live trying to make Kathy pay for your crimes.
No, no, Ellen.
No.
Don't. You must listen to me. Ellen, don't.
There was no other way out, Kathy. He was insane, utterly insane, trying to make it appear that you murdered Sam Arnold and George Davis when he did it himself. What?
Alan, what is it? What's wrong?
I just remembered something. When Sam Arnold was murdered 4 months ago, Jason and I were on a hunting trip in Canada. Why, we heard the news together over Jason's portable radio.
You mean Jason didn't kill Sam Arnold?
Why, no, he couldn't have.
But if Jason didn't murder him, who...
Kathy.
Alan, why are you looking at me like that? You don't think that I did it, do you?
Kathy, if Jason didn't do it, then what he said about you might have been true.
You believe that it is true, don't you? I can see it in your eyes. You do believe I murdered Sam Arnold and George Davis, don't you?
Kathy, your voice... It's different.
You do believe I murdered them, don't you?
Your voice is just the way Jason said it was before you pushed George Davis off the cliff. It's true. You did kill him, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I did. At times like this, I can remember. I killed Sam Arnold with a knife. And I pushed George Davis over the cliff. Would you like to know how I did it, Alan?
Kathy, your voice, your eyes... Kathy, what are you up to?
I pushed him off the cliff like this, Alan, like this.
Kathy,
Alan.
Look out!
Alan, I'm slipping!
She's gone. She was trying to kill me, and she fell over herself. She was the murderer. And nobody dreamed of suspecting her because she was so beautiful.
Alan was right. Nobody dreamed of suspecting Kathy because she was so beautiful. But her husband was ugly. Well, he was suspected right away. You see how handy a pretty face can be? Sometimes. But there's an old saying, beauty is only skin deep. So be careful about walking on cliff tops with lovely young women. One of them might be another Kathy. Oh, you have to go now. Well, perhaps you'll drop in on me again soon. Just look for the house on the other side of the cemetery. The house of Dr. Weird.
Sorry to tell you today. This one's about a murder in which the victim trapped the killer. Do you want to hear it?
Starring Paul Frees as your teller of tales. Another story from The Black Book.
Yes. From the world's most fabulous collection of strange and unusual stories, The Black Book, I've selected a story by Dorothy Horton. She calls it My Favorite Corpse. Artie Paul said goodnight to Lil. Then he walked across town to his hotel. Lil's kiss was still heavy against his lips. Artie smiled as he remembered the pleasures of the evening. Now for tonight, it was ended. But there'd be more evenings like this, many more. At the hotel, he bought a pack of cigarettes, said goodnight to the desk clerk, and went up to his room. He let himself in, flicked on the lights, then placed a telephone call to Long Island. While he waited, he whistled softly through his teeth. There was just one obstacle in the way of complete happiness for Artie. Just one. A voice answered on the other end of the line.
Hello?
Jenny, this is Artie.
I just finished that work for the office.
Oh, that's nice, dear.
I didn't realize how late it was until just now. I've decided not to drive home so late at night. I'll stay at the Tarleton.
Well, whatever you think, dear. If it doesn't seem wise to come home, then you'd better stay in town.
I think it's best, Jenny. I'm pretty tired. Call you in the morning from the office, okay?
All right, dear. Good night. And Arthur?
Yes?
Pleasant dreams, darling.
Good night, Jenny. Arthur put up the receiver on the hook and sat staring out of the hotel window. Somewhere out there beyond the lighted city was his wife, Jenny. His devoted, faithful, understanding wife, whom he was going to kill. Artie wasn't sure just when he first planned to kill his wife, but it was shortly after he met Lil Nelson. It had been one of those electric things. Artie and Lil had met a few times for cocktails after he left the office in the evening before going home. At first, it had been merely an exciting flirtation, but quickly, frighteningly, it had grown to be much more. Now he saw Lil every day. He knew he was in love with her. Then finally, one evening, he told Jenny about it.
But Arthur, you're 15 years older than this girl.
Jenny, look, we've been all over this.
Arthur, it simply wouldn't work. Right now, she seems to mean a great deal to you. But it's just a crush. A passing fascination.
Jenny, I'm sorry. I love Lil. I want a divorce.
You're acting like a schoolboy, Arthur. I don't think we should talk about it anymore.
Jenny, can't you understand what I'm saying? I'm going to leave you.
Now, Arthur, we've been through this before. I won't let you make a fool of yourself over that blonde.
Jenny, you're making a mistake.
Arthur, you need me. This girl wouldn't be good for you. You don't really love her. It's just animal attraction. It'll pass. In a little while, we can look back on this and laugh. I'm right. You wait and see. Arthur, are you listening? I won't let you have a divorce, Arthur. That's final. I know what's best for both of us. Arthur, are you listening to me?
Artie was listening. Listening to all the things he knew Jenny would say. All the platitudes, the truisms, the trite sayings that Jenny understood so well. Oh, Jenny loved him, all right. But with a cloying, maternal love. Nothing like the consuming, flaming desire that was Lil's. If there was any particular moment that Jenny sealed her fate, it was then. Half an hour after she went to bed, Artie left his house and drove back toward the city. And Lil.
You're really going to do it, Artie?
Yes, I've got it all planned. There won't be any mistakes.
Pour me another drink, baby.
Sure. Funny, she never calls me baby. Always Arthur, like I was a little boy.
You're not a little boy to me. Not at all. Will it be dangerous?
No.
When, baby?
It'll take time. 2, maybe 3 months. But I've got it planned. Then you won't be stuck in this second floor walk-up. You'll live where you want.
Dear, you's good enough for me.
We'll travel, have fun.
Florida, Bermuda.
You and me, Lil.
Soon?
Soon.
Three days after he made his decision, Artie bought a small .32 caliber gun. Then he began his period of stage setting. Lil was never mentioned in his home again. She stopped coming by the office to see him. There were no more cocktail rendezvous in the dark bar. And as time passed, people at the office forgot about her. The kidding died away. At bridge parties, his friends remarked on how nice it was to see a couple so much in love as Jenny and Arthur. They were getting along wonderfully. In the months that followed, Artie sat through countless dull plays and movies holding Jenny's hand. All the while, he ached to be with Lil. Artie wasn't certain that Jenny was fooled by all this sudden affection, but he knew their friends were.
And then after what seemed eternity, the night came. And Artie was glad. It was to be a Wednesday night, the night that Jenny went to her reading club. She'd be home around 10 o'clock. Artie went to work setting up his alibi. He phoned Jenny, then let it be known around the office he'd have to work late, might even stay in town. He ate dinner, then with his briefcase under his arm, sat down in the lobby of the Tarleton, in full sight of the night clerk. It was 8:15. Artie acted his part to perfection. By 8:30, he was nodding. At 9:05, he raised his head, blinked, and looked around. Getting up, he walked to the night clerk.
Well, that's one for the books. Fell asleep right there in the lobby. Look, I'm going up to my room. Nothing short of an atom bomb could get me out of bed tonight.
And the night clerk laughed with him. Artie went up to his room, waited 15 minutes, turned out the lights, and quietly, carefully climbed out the window onto the fire escape. 3 minutes later, he was in his car. 40 minutes later, he was climbing in the library window of his own home. He looked at his watch. 10 o'clock. That was good. Jenny'd be home any minute. He moved quickly to the hallway by the front door and slid into the hall closet, pressing himself back into the darkness. Jenny was such a creature of habit, he knew exactly what she'd do. After she came in, she'd lock the front door, put the key on the hall table, take off her coat, and hang it in the closet. Artie stood in the darkness, his hand wet around the butt of the gun he held. The complete lack of any sound was terrifying. But any minute now, it was... The door. She was home. His ears strained, listening. The stale air of the closet made him dizzy. Then a sound he hadn't expected. What was the fool crying about? Now she was walking. Just walking back and forth. And crying. Crying softly to herself. Then the crying stopped. She was right outside the closet now. He pressed farther back. Another door was opening and a knife blade of light sliced into the closet. The coat slithered off a hanger onto the floor. Jenny bent down to pick it up. And her eyes found his shoes. His legs traveled up to his face. And a rasping cry. Her eyes wide. Artie lunged.
I tell you something.
Artie dragged her into the smothering closeness of the hanging coats and pulled the trigger. As he drove back into the city, Artie knew he'd been very clever. It would look like suicide. He'd pressed Jenny's lifeless fingers around the butt of the gun. It was lying on the floor now, close to her body. It was all so simple. After he parked the car, Artie started for the hotel. But as he walked, a sudden desire made him hesitate. If only he could see Lil for a second, she'd want to know. A few minutes later, he was climbing the back stairs to Lil's apartment. He found the door unlocked and opened it.
Lil? Lil, it's Artie. Where are you, honey?
There was no answer. He stepped into the living room and suddenly something burst inside his head. Lil. Lil was lying on the floor, doll-like, grotesque. The blue robe he'd given her was stained with blood. A gun lay beside her.
Artie, help me.
Lil. Lil, baby.
Oh, it hurts, Artie. Make it stop hurting.
Lil. Lil, what happened?
She?
Who?
She came in, said she wanted to talk, but shot me.
Lil.
She's...
Lil, I'll call a doctor.
Said she knew. For months she knew about me.
Baby, when please don't try to talk.
When she shot me, your wife laughed. Artie. Oh. Artie.
Lil.
Artie got to his feet. Lil was dead. He picked up the gun. It was his gun. His gun. The one he'd always had around the house. The one he had registered in his name. Now, too late, he remembered he hadn't seen it for several days. Of course, Jenny had taken it when she planned a murder of her own. Jenny had fooled both of them. And Artie stood there for a moment, looking down at Lil. Tears filled his eyes and spilled over. After a moment, he walked to the phone and slowly picked up the receiver. I want the police. Please, this is Arthur Powell. I want to report two murders. One at my home on Long Island, and the other here at the River Crest Department.
The Black Book stars Paul Frees as your teller of tales, assisted today by the noted Hollywood actress Virginia Gregg. Dorothy Horton's suspense magazine story, My Favorite Corpse, was adapted and directed by Norman MacDonald. The special music is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens.
Next week, I'll have another story for you from The Black Book. It's most unusual, and it's called The Vagabond Murder.
Oysters are in season every month that has an R in it. And Jack Benny's gang are in season whenever Sunday night rolls around. Listen in whenever you are in the mood for fun. Clarence Cassell speaking. Remember, the comedy treat that can't be beat is Jack Benny Time, Sunday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
I have another story to tell you today. This one is about a crime in which a murderer is trapped by one of the most powerful forces of nature. Do you want to hear it?
Now starring Paul Frees as your teller of tales, another story from The Black Book.
Yes, from the world's most fabulous collection of strange and unusual stories, The Black Book, I have selected a story called The Vagabond Murder. Eric Patterson was growing desperate. He'd been there for over 2 hours, waiting. Waiting with less and less patience for the door in front of him to open. He listened intently for the warning sound of the key in the door. Eric needed to be warned because when the man he was waiting for entered the room, Eric was going to kill him. As the seconds ticked past in the darkness, Eric thought back to the beginning of all this. It was in New York. He had taken his wife, Karen, along on a business trip. It had been quite successful. And one of the best contacts he'd made was Henry Drucker. Drucker, the richest, most influential man in the whole investment business. And he seemed to like Eric from the start. And with Karen, they made a gay trio the last few days. Rounds of cocktail parties, the theater, endless nightclubs. And then on the last evening of all, Drucker had said,
"Look, Eric, why not join me on the Bermuda trip? The best thing in the world for you and Karen. My yacht sails tomorrow. What do you say?"
At first, Eric thought it was just talk. But he was wrong. And the next day they sailed for Bermuda on Drucker's yacht, the Vagabond. It wasn't until the return trip that Eric began to suspect that it wasn't him Drucker was really interested in, but Karen. And then the night before they were to dock in New York, it happened. The three of them were sitting at the small bar after dinner when Karen got up, said she wanted some fresh air, and went out on deck. A few minutes later, Drucker excused himself.
I think I'll go to my cabin, Eric. But I won't be long. Wait here for me, will you?
Well, yes, if you like.
Good, then we'll have a nightcap together.
And so Eric was left alone. As he sat there, disturbing images began to form in Eric's mind. Pictures of Drucker, handsome, virile, wealthy, and of Karen, young, beautiful, and oh, so impressionable. With a suddenness that overturned the barstool, Eric was on his feet, and half running, he crossed the room and went down the corridor to Drucker's stateroom. Drucker! Drucker, open the door! Drucker, do you hear me? Open this door, I'll break it down!
Just a minute, Eric. I'll be right there. Just take it easy.
I'll take it easy till I count to five, then I'm coming in. One, two,
three. All right, Eric.
Where's she? Where's my wife?
Well, you must be drunk, Eric. Karen isn't in here.
Was she in here, Drucker? Tell me the truth.
Don't be a fool, Eric. Of course she wasn't.
Then why was your door... Oh. I guess I have made a fool of myself. I'm sorry, Drucker.
Forget it. I'll tell you why I locked the door. You see, Eric, I'm diabetic. I have to give myself an insulin shot about this time every night. Naturally, I don't talk about it, nor do I like anyone barging in while I'm at it.
Eric stood there feeling like a fool while Drucker washed the hypodermic needle and put it away in a box. Eric watched him place the box next to a packet of insulin capsules in the drawer of the night table by his bunk.
I can understand your jealousy, old man, with a wife as lovely as Karen. But I know women, Eric, and Karen is in love with you. She always will be.
Look, I'm terribly sorry about this, Drucker.
Oh, now, let's just forget all about it. Matter of fact, I've been wanting to talk to you about something. I've already told Karen. It should prove how I feel about you, Eric. Here, pour yourself a drink.
Thanks, I need it.
You know anything about uranium?
Oh, it's expensive.
Know anything about Peru?
What are you driving at?
Uranium in Peru, Eric. Big, really big. And the payoff is so big that I was going to put in $750,000 on my own. But I'll let you have $250,000 of it if you want it.
Hmm. That's a lot of money.
So is a return of 23%.
Yeah. But I haven't got that much. I'd have to borrow on everything.
180 days should see the first dividends.
You'll have a certified check within 2 weeks. Back in New York, Eric and Drucker spent hours poring over graphs, reports, charts, surveys to make certain their investment was sound, and they could find no flaw. But 6 months later, Eric learned that even the most gilt-edged promotion can fail. Uranium in Peru didn't make him a millionaire. It ruined him. It took his entire personal fortune, and because he'd borrowed so heavily, his business and his credit were ruined. Eric suddenly found himself without a single capital asset. In desperation, he went to see Drucker.
So that's the picture, Eric. There isn't a thing I can do.
Yes, of course. I understand your position.
All my cash assets went too, and everything else of mine is tied up. You can't touch it for years.
Well, we took a chance, and we both lost. Thanks again, Drucker.
Eric, do you have any plans?
Well, I've had an offer from the coast.
Oh.
Small investment house in Oakland.
Well, I'm sure it'll work out fine. Tell me about Karen. How is she taking all this?
Karen? Oh, she's really great, Drucker. Now she decided to go back to modeling in New York for 6 months or so. Just while I'm getting started, you understand?
She's a fine girl, Eric. You're very lucky.
Yes, I know I am. Well, goodbye, and thanks again. Out in California, Eric thought often of Drucker. After all, it was part of the game. They'd miss this time, but maybe the next. More often, however, he thought about Karen in New York. He'd heard from her regularly at first, and then the letters stopped. For 6 weeks, he heard nothing. He phoned long distance again and again, but nothing was able to find her. And he was beginning to be beside himself with worry and fear. Then one night, his phone rang. Yes, hello?
Mr. Patterson?
Yes?
This is Oliver Fay. I do a little gossip column here for the Herald. I hope you read me.
No, I don't.
Well, anyway, perhaps you'd like to make a statement.
Statement? What are you talking about?
Well, it's about the marriage of Karen, your perfectly lovely ex-wife, and Henry Drucker.
Where'd you hear this?
I never reveal my sources, Mr. Patterson, but they're driving Mr. Drucker's Nash Healy out from Reno tomorrow. They'll be married aboard the Vagabond. Oh, it'll be terribly romantic, sailing off to the seven seas in search of happiness, nursing their newfound love under the Southern Cross.
Oh. And... At first, Eric thought it was all a lie, that perhaps he was the victim of a cruel prank. But he had to find out. And an hour later, he was standing on a fog-wet pier, looking at the sleek white outline of the Vagabond. And suddenly, as waves of nausea swept through him, he understood everything. Drucker had deliberately ruined him, and undoubtedly with Karen's knowledge. These last 6 weeks, Karen had been in Reno, divorcing him by default. Everything had been taken from him. His money, his wife, his pride, and he hated them for it. Derek stood there raging, his eyes fixed on the porthole he knew to be that of Drucker's own cabin. And suddenly he realized that he was going to kill Drucker. And a second later, he knew how he was going to kill him. He returned to his rooms and dialed the number of the Herald, asking for Oliver Fay.
Fay speaking.
Mr. Fay, this is Eric Patterson.
Oh, yes.
Look, I want to apologize for my rudeness earlier this evening.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Patterson. People are often harsh.
Yes, well, I'm sorry. I would like to give you a statement now. It's simply that Henry Drucker and I are close friends, and, well, there's no ill feeling between any of us, you understand. I certainly wish them the best of everything.
Well, good. I'll print that, and I'll show it to them tomorrow night. And you know, there's a pre-wedding party aboard the Vagabond.
Oh? What time are they sailing? I might want to send them a wire.
Well, I have my little notes right here. Let me see now. Cocktails at 5:30, then dinner at about 8, and finally the sailing around 2 a.m., I think. You know, it's going to be such fun. I'm the only one of the literary crowd they've included.
Oliver Fay gushed on, but
so
Eric wasn't listening now. He had all the information he needed. Henry Drucker was as good as dead right now. About 6:30 next evening, Eric stood in the shadows of the pier and watched the last of the guests arrive and board the Vagabond. Then he walked quickly across the open area directly to the porthole of Drucker's cabin. He was unobserved. The porthole was on a level with the pier, and Eric had to lie on his stomach in order to crawl through it. A moment later, he was safely inside. He closed the porthole and waited for his eyes to become accustomed to the darkness. Then he found the night table by Drucker's bunk and removed the hypodermic needle and insulin. Quickly, he filled the syringe with more than enough insulin to kill a man and placed it carefully on top of the table. Next, he found a towel and rolled it lengthwise. With it, he could choke Drucker into unconsciousness without leaving a mark. Now he was ready. An hour passed, then two, and a third, more slowly than ever. And for the first time, Eric grew nervous. Another hour and the towel in his hands was wet with perspiration. What had happened? Had Drucker, in the excitement of the evening, forgotten his injection? Panic began to rise in Eric, and he fought it back desperately. And then suddenly he heard a key in the door. He stood back and waited. The door opened, and Drucker, a black figure against the light of the corridor, entered the cabin. Eric waited until he'd blocked the door behind him. Then he moved. The towel went around Drucker's neck, and Eric twisted it with a frenzied strength. After a moment or two, Drucker ceased to struggle, and Eric finally released him. He might have been dead already, but to be sure and to make it look like suicide or an accident,
he injected the overdose of insulin. Then it was over. Perfect. Eric sighed deeply with relief and satisfaction.
Mr. Drucker? Hey, Mr. Drucker! Oh, come now, I know you're in there. You promised me an interview, you know.
Terror-stricken, Eric moved to the portal. His hands trembled as he opened it and prepared to climb through. But something was wrong. The portal was open, but he couldn't get out. Blocking it 6 inches from his hands was a solid wall of pilings, great timbers side by side. The floor of the pier was now 2 feet above him. For a moment he was dazed. And then he knew. The tide. The tide was going out, and the ship had dropped a few feet with it. The tide had cut off Eric's only escape. He was hopelessly trapped. He sat down heavily, almost ready to cry.
I'm still here, Mr. Drucker, and I'll wait right here all night if necessary. Do you hear me?
The Black Book stars Paul Frees as your teller of tales, assisted today by the noted Hollywood actor John Daner. The Vagabond Murder was written by Norman MacDonald and John Meston and directed by Mr. MacDonald. The special music is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Every Monday night, a top Hollywood star plays the leading role in a thrill-packed story on suspense on most of these same CBS radio stations. Clarence Cassell speaking. Remember, Broadway Playhouse brings you top stars and top stories Sunday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
Well, that's our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. And remember, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/terror. 1970, or you can find me on Instagram at Radio Show Nerd. I also have a YouTube channel, Terror Radio. Please check it out. Like and subscribe and share the videos will be highly appreciated. Again, this is your host, Keith, better known as the Radio Show Nerd, signing off.